International University's Radcliffe Art and Design Incubator, housed right here at CARTA. And we're kicking off Hispanic Heritage Month with one of our own, an FIU alumni of the School of Journalism and Media, Carrie Hernandez, who is now the news content director at WUSA9, a Tegna-owned CBS station. Welcome, Carrie.
Oh my God, thank you, Maggie. Thank you for having me. So happy to be here.
So I'm really excited because, as you know, we were both from Miami. So, you know, we kind of crossed paths there a couple years ago, and we stayed in touch crazy enough. And I followed your career. I know you left CBS, WFOR CBS in Miami to go and be the assistant news director where you are right now. But yeah, you were recently promoted. So congratulations. We're always glad to see our FIU, you know, alumni grow and expand and represent us, because I think we can safely say, and if, you know, we're going to do a disclaimer, if there is someone out there that we've missed, contact the podcast and we will rectify it. But I want to say Carrie is maybe the only one or a few, you know, Black Latinas in a newsroom that's really representing us out there very proudly.
Yes, absolutely. And I want to say thank you to everyone, and you know, my fellow Panthers, to everyone in the FIU community, class of 1997. I'm grateful for, you know, everything that FIU gave me and all that. So and I'm happy to be here and happy to share with all of you.
So let's kick off the conversation, because the podcast is now in season 4. When I started a couple seasons ago, never thought it would last this long.
I know,
but here we are. We always start with the same question. Talk about your journey. How did you get here? Did you always want to be a journalist?
For the most part, I did. I early on knew, by between senior year of high school and my freshman year of college, I knew that I wanted to pursue journalism. I know that in the beginning, I wanted to be in front of the camera, and I thought that that was the path to go. But I, like, often not, you know, when you're that young, you don't know all the other opportunities that are available to you. So early on, you know, I was going to school, I was working, going to school, and I got a job at Channel 7. So I started at WSBN in the Newsplex, and I was an overnight writer, and I would go to school during the day, and I would write overnight. I also had a baby at the time. By my senior year of college, I had my daughter named Kayla. Her dad is also an FIU graduate, School of Business. And we had our baby, and we were both working, and we were making it work. From there, I became a producer at Channel 10. And then from there, I went to WFOR, where I was also a line producer, and went from overnights to the 5 o'clock show. Like, I did the normal trajectory, weekends. I produced weekends, I produced the weekday shows, and was a single mom. And you know, I did all the big stories. I remember I covered Elian, you know, when he was coming over, and where people were, you know, riding in the streets, and y la cazuela, and all that good stuff. So, you know, I've been exposed to a lot in 30 years plus in this business.
So, you know, coming from Miami, you know, I covered a lot of stories working both at Univision and during my time at Scripps at WPTV, but I'm sure that across the many stations that you were at, you've also covered much more than I have. Elections, the FIU, of course, bridge collapse with affected our community. You know, Hurricane Andrew, which just celebrated 30 years, which really hit our community hard, especially down in Homestead. Yeah. Like you mentioned, Elian. We had the death of Fidel Castro. We've witnessed a lot of historical events, I guess, in our lifetimes, you know, covering news across, you know, newsrooms. What has been the one that has impacted you the most?
You know, I don't know that there's been one that's impacted me the most per se, but I know that at the end of the day, all these stories have impacted me in a sense that I wanted to make sure that we're representing our community. I know that early on in my career, I figured out that, you know, representation is important, that the people making decisions at the news conference room are important to be there, you know? And so I've always felt a responsibility to represent the people who don't have voices at the table. It's been minorities, whether it be Blacks or Latinos, women. I represent a whole gamut, single mothers. You know, I'm grateful for all the different experiences that I live in my personal life, that I know that I can relate to the audience in real life. So when we're talking about stories, I'm always trying to make sure that we are thinking about the people who don't have, or the people who don't have a voice, or don't have enough money to to represent themselves. So those are what, that's what keeps me going. And that's what helped me stay at the decision-making table, because I want to make sure that the people at the table that are making decisions don't forget about the people that look and sound like me.
So, you know, the responsibility of a producer, a reporter, an assignment manager is really to pick those stories that is going to inform, engage, and really bring change to our community. And, you know, we've both seen that happen across newsrooms when things are brought up. I want to mention you're a multiple award winner, a DuPont recipient, Emmy award winning producer, and of course, nominated for a Murrow. So big awards, specifically that DuPont one, which I think you won for a special on the Everglades, correct?
Yeah, correct. Right. That definitely was a team effort, you know, led by our chief investigator, Jim DeFiti, who is still in the Miami market and doing
yes.
amazing work.
Well known.
Well known, Jim.
Very well known.
It was a pleasure and a privilege to work with Jim for 7 years, like I did in Miami. That was my last stint there. And Jim and I became really passionate about bringing awareness to what was going on in the Everglades. And remember that time when we started seeing all that green algae that was showing up along the coastlines, and we were doing stories on the algae and what's going on. And that's where Jim and I were like, we need to dig deeper into this. Like, what are we talking about in this, and what's really happening? And that took us to, you know, exploring how, you know, and that's what the series is called, how race and politics, you know, played into the Everglades, right? And we did an entire hour special without any commercial. So, you know, grateful to WFOR, CBS for giving us that time to actually do public journalism, to actually inform the public about, you know, one of our most, you know, sacred water systems that we have in Florida. And I say us because I still will always consider myself a Floridian no matter where I live. And the Everglades is such an important part of, you know, our ecosystem, right? And it's still rare, and we got to take care of it. And if you see in that piece, you know, politician after politician, you know, depending who walks through that governor's office, they're always doing their photo ops at the Everglades, and we have to save the Everglades. But then, you know, after all the cameras go away, it's done, right? And then how the sugar industry plays into the Everglades, and, you know, the poverty and the people that work in those fields, and talking about them. And, you know, we exposed how they're still making, I mean, we did that series, you know, more about 5 years ago, but they were still being paid the same in 2013, you know, was that 2015, 2016, than they were in the 1960s, you know, to pull, to work those fields. So that's just, you know, outrageous. So a pleasure to do that kind of work and bring that awareness to our environment.
Yeah, because a lot of people, you know, the Everglades, people get misinformed about it. So to bring something like that to light and dig a little deeper, like I like to call it, like you said, you know, brings more attention to it. And it is a political matter at many levels. So let's shift the conversation here. You know, working in a Miami newsroom, it's one of the most unique newsrooms, I think, across the country and maybe even the world, because of the melting pot that surrounds us, our geographic location. You know, we are kind of like that headquarter for everybody across LATAM and Europe.
Yeah.
Talk about, you know, addressing the different communities, because it's not only about addressing, you know, the ongoing conversation about Cuba, you know, with Fidel or Venezuela, with, you know, it was Chavez, then it was Maduro, then people talking about Colombia, Nicaragua, these all continue to be conversations. And we have a lot of immigrants, a lot of people from those countries in our newsroom. How do you think, in your experience while you were here in Miami, you know, was it a newsroom that was diverse and inclusive of all these narratives?
You know, I think we could always do better, right? I think in a lot of situations, the Hispanic influence does dominate in Miami, because that's what the dominant population is. I mean, at the end of the day, the English language stations are competing with the Telemundos and Univisions that have, you know, all, you know, amazing ratings, right? That you don't see that in most markets. So that influence and is there. I think that when I look back, when I was in Miami, I never felt the need to worry about that the Latin voice wasn't at the table, because it was always there, right? There was enough people in the newsroom representing the Latin experience, to talk about it. So I always found myself at those tables having to pull and making sure and reminding everyone at the table that we have to remember to cover our Black communities, which I don't think that we did that well enough, right? So that's where I would always pull and pull and punch, because it's very easy to roll into a Black neighborhood and just cover the shootings and the violence that's going on, but not necessarily cover the positive that's happening, you know. But I do remember that there were some, you know, there were some good moments at NBC6 when I worked there. You know, the news director was African American, Yvette Miley, who, you know, is now at MSNBC. And so Yvette, you know, made sure that representation mattered. And that was at a time when Telemundo and NBC6, you know, joined forces. So I think that there was a good representation there, and we were thinking about it. But there were other times in other newsrooms that I worked early in my career that wasn't necessarily the priority, and there weren't any minorities in management or people that look like me. So, but I will say that I didn't feel like they didn't want to do the stories. I think there just wasn't that awareness to do those stories, right? Or people didn't have enough of a, you know, I'm going to go into Overtown and see what positive things are happening in Overtown or what positive things are happening in Miami Gardens. You know, I think that there's always room for improvement in these newsrooms to make sure that the positive side is being represented there. So I'm not going to criticize it in general to make those general statements. I think that there have been efforts to do it, but we can always do better when it comes.
Yeah, we can always do better. I mean, and I guess the next question is, you know, going from that newsroom to going to a newsroom in Washington is so different. Yeah. Even though there's a large number of Hispanics in Washington, I'm assuming that you cover stories, but they're not the center or the focus at any given time in your rundown.
No, unfortunately not. I think here it's a very different animal. Like I here estamos muy americanizados, like I like to say.
very Americanized.
Very Americanized here. Very Americanized. I think I have to say the Black and the white here is covered very well. I think that this is a liberal part of the country. So there is, you know, that is very progressive here. Oh, the office, my office, like, my office is like, go home. So I think the representation, but I think that, you know, the Latin community here is different. Here you have a lot more Central Americans that are here. You have a lot more people here. El Salvador is represented, Mexico, Honduras. You know, it's funny. There's some places here that I walk in and I speak Spanish to them because I'm like, I want to speak Spanish to someone. And they look at me, one, because they can't believe I speak Spanish. And so their brain doesn't connect with what they're looking like. And, you know, I'll speak to them in Spanish and they respond to me in English, which I think is funny. And sad at the same time, because they can't wrap their brains around that there are, you know, Black Latinos. Yes, we are. We here exist. So, you know, we'll get there. But we have to do a better job in our newsrooms to make sure that we are representing. You know, most recently, I did hire a Spanish-speaking reporter, so we do have a Spanish-speaking reporter on staff, and you know, so I'm happy to have brought Rafael Sanchez Cruz to come work with us. He joined us a few months ago, so that was a big hire for me. And then, you know, just the other day, we had the story of and it's still happening now, where these governors from Texas and Arizona, New Mexico, are sending the migrants and putting them on buses. Right? We've heard of the news of the headlines. Mm-hmm. I'm here to Washington, D.C. And that was a story that, you know, one of my reporters brought up one day. And I'm like, we got to get on top of that. Right. We got to, you know, these busloads are coming in and nobody else in the market was doing that story. So we were the first ones to do it. You know, I like to believe, you know, and I do believe that it's because I'm sitting in this chair and I said that, and I'm bringing my diversity to the table and saying, we have to pay attention to what's happening here. You know, what's going on with these migrants? Let's ask the tough questions. What services are they being offered? Because they were being dropped off in the middle of the night, you know? And it's been a tough fight for the mayor here in Washington, D.C. to actually, you know, she's asked for federal help, has not been able to get it. And, you know, we have these smaller organizations that are trying to help the migrants because there aren't people like in Miami when, you know, Cuban people show up, they're like, "Es mi primo, let me grab him," mm-hmm. or "Let me grab my cousin," or what? That's not happening here. People aren't showing up to pick them up. They're just being dropped off in the middle of nowhere. So happy to start pushing and bringing those stories to the forefront that people need to be paying attention to. And it's funny, once we started doing it, the other stations followed through.
Of course, because everybody's monitoring what the other one is doing. They want to have the scoop of the day. We know that. We're always watching the monitors.
Exactly.
So exactly. Let's turn the conversation as we wind down about misinformation, because that is kind of the topic of the century, if you want to say. And we live in the age of technology, and this podcast really focuses too on, you know, technology and how it affects every single job that you do today needs some type of skill or some type of tech aspect to it. So how do you guys in the newsroom manage the misinformation? Because you hear NBC and, you know, Univision with their fact checkers, and there's a whole department of people. It's almost like a FBI of TV. So yeah. How do you guys handle it over there?
You know, it's funny you ask that, because for us, it's a really big deal here, you know, and handling misinformation. So as a matter of fact, we have an entire unit at Tegna, because our company, we're a CBS affiliate, but we're owned by Tegna, and Tegna owns 52 stations across the country. And we have a whole national unit, and I have a unit here in my newsroom dedicated to stomping out misinformation. And we call it the Verify unit. And we, you know, basically set out and we tell our viewers that, you know, we're here to verify. If you're hearing something online or you're hearing something that you don't understand, let us know and we're going to verify and check it out for you and stamp out that misinformation. So I literally have like two reporters, a producer and a researcher dedicated to us, you know, stomping out misinformation. And we spread it through all our newscasts. You know, we try to not try, but we do, you know, our viewers, our listeners, everyone reaches out to us that they have questioned something that they're not sure if it's true or not. We'll be like, okay, we're going to verify that. And we go out of our way to even take the viewer through the step-by-step process of what it takes to do journalism. And we're like, we're going to have sources up front. We're going to tell you who we went to get this information, to find out if something is true or not. And this is what we found out. We lay out the facts for you. And then at the end, it's like, this is true. This is false. This is somewhere in the middle, right? And try to be as transparent as we can with viewers to help them make sense of all this information that's coming at them.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's an excellent initiative. And I'm glad to hear that, you know, it's taking priority and center stage over there in that newsroom with you heading up with your team, you know, those efforts. So, you know, as we conclude the podcast, you know, we always ask our guests to talk about, you know, how can they inspire that next generation of communicators, you know, our leaders. You know, there's probably someone somewhere listening to this podcast and they're like, I want to be Carrie Hernandez. So how do they get there?
You know what?
What's your advice?
My advice is just come. Journalism needs you. That's the first thing I'd say. We need more journalists. This is not a business that you do because you want to make tons of money. You do this because you have a passion and you're curious and you want to make a difference and you want to speak up for the people who don't have voices. And that's the reward. The reward is that you get to make a difference in somebody's life, you know, every day if you want to, right? So that's what I say. It's be passionate, be curious, and be willing to grind, right? It's not a glamorous job, but it's definitely a rewarding job. And I've been doing it now for 30 plus years. And now I get my juice out of, because I don't go out and report or go work on stories, but now I work to inspire and move everything out of the way I can so that my journalists can be successful, my reporters in the newsroom, producers, executive producers. I want them to go out there and work the stories, right? And make them come true. So, you know, that's what I say to them. It's like, if you wanna work in news, be passionate and be curious, ask questions, and just jump in and do it. And don't worry about what's next. If your heart is in the right place, you know, everything else will work out. But it is extremely rewarding to be able to make a difference, to give people information, to be their source when their lives are in danger. Because we also, like, today I was just dealing with tornado warnings. We have tornadoes up here. Down in Miami, I dealt with hurricanes, you know, and letting people know, hey, get out of the way, get in your house. You know, now I'm like, I'm still trying to wrap my head around, you know, when you deal with a tornado, you got to go into the basement, right? We didn't have to deal with that in Miami, but here I got to, like, I'm going to like to go into a basement. Okay, let me wrap my head around that.
But Miami's more like the bathroom. Barricade yourself in the bathroom.
Exactly.
Or underneath your stairs.
Exactly. And here we have to be like, stand in the, you know, stand under a door, you know, stand in the hallway to,
yeah,
tornado doesn't get you. But we have, you know, we're here to warn people and keep them safe. That's also a huge responsibility that we have as well during snowstorms and et cetera. And then now we have to, you know, be that guard for people when it comes to misinformation. So huge responsibility that I welcome. You know, I'm humble but confident that I'm trying to do good work every day.
And we thank you for that. And I want to thank you, Carrie, for joining the podcast in season 4. Carrie Hernandez, once again, the news content director at WUSA 9 in Washington, D.C., a Tegna-owned CBS station. Carrie, wishing you the best. Stay away from those tornadoes. Stay safe. We'll keep in touch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, proud Panther. Panther for life. Pause up.
Pause up.
Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you. That was awesome.